This call is being recorded.
Hey, Melanie, this is Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for being our guest speaker. This is the month of June, and in this learning module, we're covering saying what you need to say. And of course, that falls under the phase of finding of speaking your truth. So I'm very, very excited that you're here. I'll just give a brief introduction so that people kind of get a sense of who you are, and then I'll have you elaborate a little bit because I don't want to miss anything with your work. You are a book shaman and a visionary business coach, and I know that you've worked with a number of authors and helped them hit the top 10 bestseller list? Is that right?
No, the New York Times bestseller list.
That's also fabulous.
Yeah, it's fun. I just help people to write books, write the books that are within them, essentially, and, you know, strategize how to maybe hit the list. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a real passion of mine.
Awesome. Well, I know that you do amazing work, which is why I wanted to bring you on this call and talk about some things related to how we say what it is that we need to say, which is not particularly an easy task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, I think I'll just start. I think my first question that I wanted to ask you was, how does finding your truth and speaking your truth differ?
You know, I think for me, finding your truth is really about getting quiet. It's letting that monkey mind relax. Of course, I use the body compass as well, because I think, you know, the body never lies. Mm-hmm. And I also think it includes a lot of resting and introspection, maybe journaling, imagining, whatever that is for you. It really is about a deep dive into the quiet place, letting go of all the distractions and the things we think we have to do, the things that we feel, you know, obligated to do, our list of shoulds. You know, we're always shoulding all over ourselves. So, you know, finding your truth to me is about getting quiet. Speaking your truth, I think, is about standing in your power. Like, once you really know what's true for you, I think then you can speak it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I love that, standing in your power. I think oftentimes with women, I don't want to get into gender stuff, but it can be really hard to feel comfortable standing in our power. It can feel big and make us feel vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. It really, you know, I think that's the biggest part of standing in your power is letting go of the worry about what others might think of us.
Right, and that is a trick in itself.
Absolutely.
Well, and thinking about, as we talk about finding our truth and speaking our truth, sort of branching off of that, how do you think that trusting your truth influences our ability to speak it or vocalize it?
Well, I think if you've gotten quiet, if you've really, really, you know, finding our truth is ever-changing. You know, it's almost chaotic because it just shifts and flows and changes based on our experience. So, but once we've found that truth, I think it's less about trusting your truth and more about being willing to stand up to it. And that brings us back to, you know, our fear of, you know, alienating other people. And we're wired to want to fit in. It's how we survived from the very, you know, from our cave days. We're always censoring ourselves and holding back our truth so as to not risk losing people. You know, we live within groups and in society, and I just think that it's being willing to stand up to that truth rather than trusting it. Like, if you've really, really honed in on what that is, what is true for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Yeah, that's, I love that that is your thought in regard to that, because, you know, in thinking about trust, I think the reason why I was thinking about that word, and I know for myself, I struggled with trusting my truth, and it is more that, like, as I interact within groups or within my family system or in work situations, people, like, I'll feel like I know what my truth is, and then people will challenge me. So then I waver, and it's not so much that I'm not, for me, it has been somewhat of trusting, do I really know what is true for me? But I think that you're tapping into a really essentially critical point, which is that we have a natural tendency to want to fit in, and that's a part of standing in our power and standing up for ourselves, which is really, really an awesome point.
Yeah, and I do, and I think that's what I was saying when I was talking about how it's ever-changing, because someone might challenge you and get you to see the world in a different way, and you might, you know, your truth might shift, right? But it's like that if you can be in this constant state of what is true for me in this moment and allow yourself to get quiet in that, I think that, you know, I think that that's crucial.
Right. I love that. And the thing is that, you know, we have, like, if our truth shifts, that's okay. And being able to know in that moment and stand up for it in that moment, we're, you know, if we really are present, and we end up living moment to moment anyway, right? So that's an awesome way to kind of approach dealing with managing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Okay. So one of the things that I think has been an interesting process or journey for me is, okay, so I know what my truth is, but sometimes I need to, like, talk to a therapist or talk to a coach. And then I find, and especially in my relationship with my boyfriend, it's like, okay, well, when is it important for me to communicate my truth with him? How much of that is something that I just need to learn for me? And then how much of that, like, can you speak to a little bit your thoughts on how we know when it's time to verbalize or articulate our truth, and in what ways?
You know, I think we know it's time to communicate our truth when we're fairly clear about what it is. I mean, that's the obvious answer. But on a deeper base level, I think we know it's time to communicate our truth when it feels like love and not fear.
Oh, I love that. Oh, my gosh.
I think the foundation of everything, like everything in the world, is either love or fear. And so I walk around in the world these days saying, does this feel like love? You know, if I'm buying something, does this feel like love? If I'm, you know, about to have a difficult conversation, does this feel like love? And just as long as I know that that is the intent behind what I have to say, then I think it can be time. And I think that that's also true in, I believe firmly, that we can say anything, like anything to anyone, if we say it out of love.
Right.
And it goes back to the intention behind it, right? Like, if the intention is love and we're saying it with love and we're not, you know, our ego's not involved, our, you know, our masks aren't on, like we're really, really deeply connecting with someone, that just feels juicy, right?
Totally. Totally. I think you did. That's an awesome way to articulate something I've struggled to explain from time to time. And one of the mantras I like to use is, I deserve to feel the full spectrum of my emotions, and it is not my responsibility how other people feel. And I think what you just said is the caveat behind the last piece of, you know, if we show up and it feels like love and we have pure intention and we're not trying to be hurtful or harmful, we can speak our truth and we can articulate that even if it's hard, because we should be able to say that out loud, and that sometimes people respond in ways that we can't anticipate, or their feelings might be hurt, but we're not showing up with that intention along the way.
Right, right, absolutely. I love that mantra. You've shared that with me before. I think it's golden.
Thank you. Thank you. I love it too. I don't even know how I ended up with it, other than it arrived in my head, which is a great way to have a
mission.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I know some of these questions are going to seem a little bit redundant, but I think we're getting into some really great stuff here. So the next thing that I just kind of wanted to tap your brain is, so when we think about how we find clarity, and sending the message that we intend to send, whether it's written or verbal, how do you do that? How do you work with people to do that? And the reason why I think this is an interesting question to pose is, I know for myself, finding my truth and then speaking my truth, I always am wanting for or hoping to be heard and understood. And having clarity about like what's emotional, what actually needs to be said. Can you speak to that a little bit? And I know I'm kind of turning this into a bigger question.
No, I think it's a great question. I mean, that's all we really want, right? Like all of us, to be truly heard, to be witnessed. So finding clarity for me, if it's verbally, I think it's a matter of slowing down, deeply listening in conversation and articulating our thoughts. For writing, I think it's, you know, it's a process of maybe journaling, doing some free flow writing, some, you know, sort of subconscious writing, telling the story or the message to ourselves without worry about our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting clearer and clearer. And I think the important piece is to step back and look at the big picture of what it is that we're trying to say. Because we get so mired down in the, you know, in the trees that we miss the forest, so to speak.
For sure. Yeah,
does that answer your question?
It does. It really does. And I think that that's something that we often forget to do. I just had a hard conversation with my boyfriend last night. And in the midst of it, I was realizing that, like, when our emotions are all heightened, it's hard to step back and see yourself in the big picture of life and then whoever it is that you're interacting with or whatever it is that you're wanting to say, to see them also in the big picture of life. And that's a really awesome way to have some perspective and objectivity, and to help us then find clarity around, okay, do I really want or need to articulate this thing right now as it fits into the big picture? Because, of course, in the moment with heightened emotions, we're always going to want to demand that our voice is heard.
Absolutely. I was just thinking as you were speaking, I'm like, yeah, and if our inherent core is just wanting to be heard, and we feel like we can't wait, we can't like gain clarity and say, let's come back to this conversation later. We, you know, because our egos are always there. The ego is not a bad thing, right? It serves its purpose, but it's always there, and we really want to be heard. And so maybe we don't give ourselves enough time to stand back and say, wait, let me think about this a little bit, you know, and almost be a philosopher about it, right?
Right.
Like gathering our thoughts and you know, deciding if they're true for us and all of those things that we might do, you know. It's a lot more difficult when the ego's involved.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, for sure.
Really quick before we go on, you said something a minute ago about subconscious writing. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I feel like I know what that is, but I would love to hear you just do a brief explanation.
You know, I'm blanking on the exact name. There is another term for it, but it sort of reminds me of Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way, where she has her morning pages, and you basically just free flow write, like not no thinking, no order, no, it's just totally random. So there's that. Or there's also a process that you can do. So you take the predominant writing hand, like I'm right-handed, for example. So I would write with my left hand, and I would just ask questions and just let my left hand answer, because it activates the other side of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So it activates the right side of the brain and lets the sort of left side logical piece sit aside, you know, set aside for a bit, so that we can really tap in. So there's a couple of different ways to do that.
Oh, that's really very cool. So I guess in that vein, are there any other tips or techniques that you have that you utilize either with for your own self or as you've worked with clients through coaching or through book writing that helps people kind of get out of their head and verbalize what it is that they're trying to articulate, whether it's verbally or on paper?
Yeah, I mean, I don't do a lot of verbal stuff, although I have had an author client actually who's written 3 books, but he hates to write, so he actually speaks them into a recorder. And then it is because it works for him, right? He doesn't like the process of writing. He doesn't like writing by himself in a vacuum. Like, he likes to create with people. And so we literally just used a tape recorder for him to just speak out. I mean, he's a motivational speaker too, so that's his sweet spot. But in terms of writing, that's where I really, you know, feel the juice. I think the best example would probably be in my memoir writing program. When I ask people to write and to tell their story in the form of a memoir, I actually ask them to sit down and write, like, let's say 1,000 words a day, and to not concern themselves with where it's going, to just write what wants to come. So in essence, what happens is that over the period of our time working together, the book tells them what it wants to be. The book informs them of what it will be. And I think the same is true of any writing. When we write past the point of really kind of thinking too deeply and trying to be logical and trying to, you know, form coherent sentences, when we get out of that, like past the, if you're a surfer, like past the breakers where it's more smooth, then you just allow what wants to come. And all of it sort of comes together at the end into something you may not have even thought it would be. And in the terms of, you know, getting clear about speaking your truth, it allows you to get to that truth. It allows you to get past the monkey mind and really, really feel into what's true for you, right?
Totally. I really, really love that. And actually, that's kind of making me think of something else. One of the things that I've asked my participants to do or to consider doing is doing a really regular journal process throughout the course of this year. With the way that I've designed the year to go and all of the different concepts and things that we're working at digging into, I think it stirs up stuff. And I think journaling, or I at least have found journaling to be a very, very helpful process of A, understanding myself, B, finding clarity, and then C, being able to actually see the way that things change over time, because sometimes it seems like nothing's changing.
Right.
Can you speak a little bit to your thoughts on the power of journaling?
I mean, I think, I honestly think it's what I just said. It's getting out past the breakers, past the rough spots. And, you know, I might even suggest that they share those journal entries with you. So when I'm doing my program, I have, you know, I'm reading their memoir, and I'm also reading whatever they journal alongside of that, so that they can just kind of, for lack of a better word, barf on the page, whatever is up for them, whatever is true for them in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And what helps the healing piece of that is that you, Lisa, become a really, really compassionate witness, which is the most important thing. When we talk about how we just really, really want to be heard at the core of everything, having a compassionate witness listen to us or read what we've written and discuss it, like, really shift something for people.
Awesome. That's awesome. I love that recommendation, and I think that you're totally right. There's something about having someone be a compassionate witness that helps, just like what you said. That's really wonderful.
Well, and I mean, here's the thing, like it's only you, and there's already a level of trust between you and your participants, right? So it's just you. They're not sharing it with their mom. They're not sharing it with their, you know, their husband or their partner. They're just sharing it with you, and you, it's the sacred container that you create, and it really, really brings some deep healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do. I think that you're totally right, and I know that this is true for me. Is the way we articulate and process things verbally versus the way we are able to tap into something through the art of writing, whether it's writing with your hand or typing, you get different information. So I know that I can verbally process through things, and then I can journal entry about it, and it's a completely separate experience. It's the same topic, you know, but it's totally, what comes out is totally different. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you could also have them speak it if they don't like to write, or have them paint it if they don't like speaking or writing. Opening up that portal, which you and I have done together, right?
Right, yeah.
Whatever form feels really juicy can still be, you know, just as healing with that compassionate witness.
Awesome. So essentially what you're saying is just get creative, and whatever ends up working for you to speak your voice, whether it's through painting or writing or singing or whatever, that you play around until you find that, and then you use what is your sweet spot.
Yes, you use the joy. I mean, what feels joyful and juicy.
Awesome. So what do you think is our biggest barrier to doing this kind of self-expression?
Fear of what others will think. I have I have a theory. I have a lot of theories. Anybody who knows me knows I'm always like, I have a theory. and I'm not a scientist, but so I don't believe in writer's block. It
Ooh.
Isn't that I don't believe people can't be stopped up in the writing process. I do believe that happens, but I don't believe in writer's block as it's traditionally put forward. I believe that writer's block is writing for an audience and not yourself. So
Ooh.
If you are writing for someone or 10,000 someones, or if you want to be a New York Times bestseller, 50,000 someones, it stops you every time. Whereas if you are writing for yourself, giving yourself that freedom, a totally different experience. There's so much deep opening in that. I don't know if you read or saw the movie The Martian.
Yes,
Was
I
it?
just saw it. It's
Yeah.
amazing.
So he is a science nerd. He's not a scientist. He just loves science. He loves math. He loves science. So he decides that he's going to plot a trip to Mars. And he literally like does all the math. Like this makes me fall asleep right now as I'm talking. But he like does all the math and like charts the course and does all of that stuff and like writes it out. And then he's doing this and he's like, gosh, this would make a good book. So he starts posting up just chapters on his website. People fell so in love with them that when he was finished, they were like, could you please make this into a Kindle book? So he goes into Kindle and makes up a Kindle book himself. He slaps a stock photo of Mars on the front of it and says, okay, here it is. It's free. Well, eventually, Amazon wants you to charge. So it can't be free forever. So I think, I don't know, he raised it to like 99 or 199. Then tens of thousands of people downloaded this book and he got a Church of Film publishing deal. He got this movie deal. So he was just doing what he loved. He wasn't writing for who might read it. J.K. Rowling did the same thing.
That is so awesome, and that's such an awesome background because I didn't read the book, but I saw the movie, and it's a very incredible movie. My boyfriend had heard that some of that, so I knew just a tiny little bit of that. But that's such a great example of, when we don't think about who the audience is, and we just do what it is that we love or that we're passionate about. And now here he's written this amazing book and had this huge movie and
And it started out as free chapters on his website. I mean, that is the secret sauce. That is the number one takeaway in life. If you can just do what you love, follow your joy, follow your passion, everything comes from that.
right.
But we can't do that when if I'm sitting, I just finished my first novel this past week.
Oh, you
If
did.
I had,
Congratulations.
thank you. If I had sat and thought about everyone that was going to read it, I would have just been frozen. There's no way I could have told the story that I wanted to tell if I had sat and considered my audience all along the way.
Right. I will say that that is really true for me too. I got away from writing blog posts on my website just because that didn't jive for me. But I do try to write like a weekly newsletter. And there have been some things that I've written about. And the only way that I could write it and click send is to basically write it to like my best friend, like someone that I trust very much. I know she's not going to judge me and that she'll continue to respect me even if I, put my soft underbelly out for everyone to see. I really can't think about the number of people that's on the list and or who some of the individuals are because I would end up so paralyzed by the fear of judgment that I would never, ever in a million years write a single newsletter to a list of people. I couldn't do it.
You know what else I hear in that I think is so important is that when we get clear about our truth, when we really know what's true for us, and when we put it out there, it's that time to let go because anyone who were to read your newsletter and say, ugh, what is she doing? Like, they're not your tribe, they're not your people. And, you've got to release those people with love because here's the thing. Like, I hate zombie books. I hate zombie movies. I just can't stand them. And, I might have to read a book I'm in a master's program. I have to read a book about zombies. And so I judge the writing accordingly. Like, I critique it and say what I liked about it, but I don't like the story, but it's not personal, right? I'm just not part of her tribe. You didn't know you were going to get to talk about zombies today.
I love it.
Yeah, but I mean, really, like it isn't personal. It's just that we're all vibrating at these specific frequencies, not to get too woo-woo, but you know, those people just aren't your tribe. Like people who read my bio on my website where it says that I've peed my pants, if they're not into that like level of truth, then they're not my people, and I kindly, you know, send them along with love, right?
Right. I think I love that you brought that up because I think that really speaks to the importance of, as we identify our truth and then speak it, a huge part of that is being authentic. Because if we're authentically ourselves, then we are naturally either going to draw in or repel certain people. And I think that it's easier to not be our most authentic self because, especially socially, we have, you know, we kind of hope that people will like us or that we'll fit in. And one of the things that we will cover throughout the course of my Year of You program is at a certain point, the more authentically you are yourself and you know your truth and you speak it and you get more in alignment, people start falling away and people start coming in. And that
Absolutely.
falling, the falling away of people, especially if they're significant relationships, that is a very hard process, and it hurts, and it's something to be processed through, really.
See, now I embrace that. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I embrace that. Like, I really. The alternative is, would you want to draw in your unideal people? Because if you were drawing in people who were not your ideal, then you're probably likely wearing a mask. You're
Right.
not, you know, you're not truly being yourself. And I really want people who get me. Like, it's like settling. I mean, we wouldn't settle in a romantic relationship, in a partnership. Like, I guess maybe some people would. But if you really, really want someone to accept all of you totally, like, that seems so important to me, to just be wholly yourself so that only your people will be in that mix.
Right. Well, then the thing that's beautiful about that is that if you are your authentic self 100% and you have the right, like the people who love you for exactly who you are, your ability to mess up or fail or maybe get something wrong along the way, there's so much more room for error because those people love and respect and are going to naturally treat you well. You might have to work through a few ups and downs, but they're going to believe in who you are and think that you're naturally good. And they're going to have more flexibility in, oh, okay, well, maybe she had a crap day and she didn't mean to hurt my feelings, that kind of thing, you know?
You know, I have a theory.
Woohoo,
I have a theory. So I
what's it?
believe that our ideal clients, if you were to write out an ideal client profile, which is essentially just listing out all of the things that you would want your ideal client to be or have or do, right? You would find, and I've found this over and over and over, which is a little bit of proof in my theory, but you would find that they're you. Maybe a few steps back. And the theory is that, let's take the allegory of the cave. If you're leading someone through a darkened cave and you're 4 miles ahead of them with your flashlight, how well are they going to be able to make their way through? If you're a few steps ahead with the flashlight trained on the ground, it can follow you the whole way out.
Totally.
So your ideal people really are going to be resonant with you because they're going to be similar to you. And that's the same with a big tribe of people on your list.
Right. So I guess that's making me think a little bit about like the clients who are going through my program, you know, as they're identifying and thinking about like ideal friends or ideal support people of their support network or ideal partners. which is a little different than an ideal client like you and I would discuss that. How would you frame that so that they might kind of understand this concept a little bit?
Let's take the relationship piece. I mean, I think it's always like super helpful to have a list of how you want to feel. And I know you are like an expert on, you know, pulling out core desired feelings. So I think that's super important. I think, you know, listing out what types of traits you're looking for, what types of, you know, I actually did this with my boyfriend before I met him. I had made of things that I was looking for in a partner.
Uh-huh.
And had done the same thing.
I totally, I did the same thing. I had a list. I had 43 things on my list. I have very specific interests. and of course,
we
I
met
ended
3 weeks after we wrote our list.
You did? Oh, I love it. I love it.
Well,
it took me a
you're
year.
Not clear, if you can't get clear about what you want, how is the universe going to provide it to you? Not that the universe is an ATM machine, but I mean, how can you get what you want when you don't know what you want, right?
Right, totally, totally. And I think that that's true for whether it's a partner or what kind of life you want to live or how you want to feel every day. It takes some time and attention to dig into those things to get there, to find that clarity. And it can be a little overwhelming and it can take a little time, but it's a very important step in the process of navigating to your best life or wherever it is that you're headed or you want to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. I think we've covered a whole bunch of what I was hoping we'd chat about. One of the things, though, that I'm really curious about what you might have to say, and maybe we've covered it already, is kind of what are your thoughts on why it's so scary to show up the way we want to show up, speak our truth the way we want to speak it, and how is it that you've found that people can be less afraid or that you've been able to become less afraid?
You know, it goes back for me to what we were talking about being just wired to want to fit into a social group. I mean, that I know I keep repeating myself, but I think it's so important to understand, like, our brain chemistry around that. We really, really want to fit in. We really want to belong. And it's scary to put ourselves out in such a way that, you know, I think as women, maybe I'm wrong, this is another theory, I'm just going to keep saying it. I think we all have these experiences. Mine happened in junior high of trying to fit into a group of girls and maybe they're not very nice, right? Or some experience that's sort of traumatizing that we have that we've sort of built our life on, right? Like, oh, well, this happened in junior high, so I really wanted to fit in, but I didn't. And I was sort of cast aside, and so there's trauma there, right? So that creates this neural pathway in our brain that you know, speaking our truth or being who we are isn't going to be enough.
Right. And I love that you talk about that sense of not being enough. I think that I found that for myself, that is one of my like biggest fears deep down with anything is that I'm not going to be good enough or that I'm going to really mess something up or fail. Failing and not being enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how Brené Brown talks about those concepts and how central of a fear issue or struggle that is for so many people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we feel, I know for myself, and as I've talked with other people, is that unless we can open up and be vulnerable about that, which is a hard thing to do, we end up feeling very alone in that. And the reality is that we're not alone at all. It's just not very many people are willing to be vulnerable enough to admit that that's a deep fear or struggle within them.
That is so true. I mean, everybody's having the same experience that we're having, and maybe it's not exactly the same story, but I've coached clients who are going through something like exactly the way that I've gone through something, like divorce, move, like starting a new life, like starting a business, like all of this stuff, and I've been like, oh my gosh, like we truly are not alone, you know? Like, we really, really aren't alone. As much as we think, like, oh, nobody understands, or, like, I'm really experiencing this, and I don't know if anybody's going to relate to it, and we all do. That's so, so important to realize.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as we find our tribe and get connected up with the people who are really, you know, the best fit for us in our lives, or at least at this juncture on our life path, that's a part of, you know, knowing that we're not alone, because that's going to be the kind of support system that's really going to help us. And I think that having a good support system is a good foundation also to, in a way, finding and speaking our truth. That's a very individual process, and it's definitely each individual person's thing, but having support and having people to turn to when we need that support is helpful for us to feel brave again and to, you know, do the stuff that's hard.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Now I have my barking dog. Love our little ones. Love for balls. Okay, well.
Yes, I have the hounds contained. I do wonder if we could speak for just a minute on the difference between writing and speaking, because I think that there's just one thing I want to add to this conversation that might be helpful.
Oh my gosh, yes. Thank you so much. I would love that.
Okay. So, you know, in the difference between writing and speaking, I actually don't think there's that much of a difference. Except a big one. So in writing, you know, we of course we have to apply butt to chair, or ass to chair, as Anne Lamott says, and put fingers to keyboard, right? We have so much freedom in that, because we don't have to share our first draft with anyone. First draft of a letter, a first draft of a book, anything, anyone. We don't have to share that. We can spend the time getting clearer and clearer and more concise. I think it was Mark Twain who said, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one instead. Meaning he didn't have time to really, like, hone in on the message, right? To really think about the big picture, to think about the whole forest, right?
Right.
But in speaking, and this is the piece I wanted to get to share, is that as we were talking about before, in the case of the conversation with your boyfriend, or any conversation that we're right in the mud of, right? We don't always take the time to filter out things. We just blurt them out. Like, instead of deeply listening to someone in a conversation, we're so often focused on how we want to respond. Like, I do it all the time. I'm not really listening. I'm just thinking of what I'm going to say next.
Mm-hmm.
If we could spend the time more deeply listening, give ourselves a few moments to ask, like, what's true for me in this moment before we speak? I don't know. I think there might be a heck of a lot less communication snafus than there are. And it's part of always, always like a touchstone, what is true for me right now. It's always tapping into that place of your truth.
I totally love that. I think that alone right there, giving ourselves the moment in any and every moment to try to figure out what is true for us right now is a very helpful navigational tool to then figure out what's next. And I love that you make the point about being present and thinking and really listening to people instead of being kind of ahead of ourselves. It's actually, I think, very rare in this society to have people show up to listen and to be fully present in our conversations. And it's a huge gift. It's not very common, but it is a very powerful way of being able to, you know, be in relationship with others.
Yeah. Do you want to hear my last theory of the day?
Yes, please.
Have you ever been in conversation with someone and they keep repeating themselves like over and over, and you're like, I've heard that. I know. Like, you've already said that. The reason that they're repeating that is because they don't feel heard. So they're going to continue to say the same thing over and over and over until they feel that compassionate witness piece, until they feel deeply heard.
Oh, that's so interesting. That I think that there might be a whole lot of truth to that.
Just a theory, but I don't know. I've noticed it over and over. If I'm really paying attention, like, oh, he keeps repeating that, so he's not feeling heard. Or, you know, I've done it myself when I literally don't feel heard. And I will say that, like, I don't feel heard. So, yeah, I think there is some truth to that theory.
For sure. I definitely, as a social worker, have experienced that thing where, you know, there's these repeating themes. But I think part of the reason why that happens is because we're not seen or heard very often in many arenas, and especially if there's some whether it's just a single conversation or if it's an experience in life that we're needing some validation for or we're still processing through. Until we get to the point to where we're seen and heard, we're probably going to keep repeating some of the same things.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Martha Beck who talks about the, I'm trying to think if it's like genocide or if it's Afghanistan, like people coming back from Afghanistan, like from a psychological standpoint, they need at least one or two compassionate witnesses to truly hear their story before they're able to process and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
I do, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm sure you see that as a social worker too.
Yeah, well, in my work at the VA hospital, for sure, then quite a bit. Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else as we've been talking that kind of comes to your mind that you wanted to make sure to share? I love the ground we've covered, and I know that we've really talked about a whole lot of really juicy, great stuff, but I want to make sure that if there's anything else that's popped in as we've been chatting, you can share that too.
You know, I wanted to cover that, you know, difference between writing and speaking. I think for me, the big takeaway is whatever it is, just to express your truth, whatever form that is for you, whatever feels juicy, if it's writing, if it's speaking, if it's, you know, just allowing yourself the quiet, introspective time of getting clear and just get it down in some way.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Miss Melanie, thank you so, so very much for your time today. And
you're welcome.
I'm going to go ahead and just end this recording.